de la competencia, el individualismo y la acumulación establecidos en el mundo. En las presentaciones se conocieron los objetivos, las estrategias y las acciones de los procesos que llevan a cabo estas organizaciones. Unas autodefinidas como feministas, otras que no comparten esta denominación. Algunas, de acuerdo a las particularidades y condiciones de sus luchas, ven necesario calificar de manera más concreta su organización feminista. Es el caso de las compañeras de la Asamblea de Feminismos Comunitarios de Bolivia.
Creíamos que esas luchas, los conceptos y categorías creadas no nos significaban, no nos representaban plenamente. Entonces, sí nos consideramos feministas, pero reconceptualizando el feminismo, y eso nos llevó a reconceptualizar el patriarcado, y eso nos llevó a la necesidad de adjetivar nuestro feminismo y por eso plantear el feminismo comunitario.
O el caso de las mujeres populares y diversas del Ecuador.
Planteamos que es un feminismo popular y diverso porque diversas somos las mujeres. No es posible hablar de un feminismo donde hay una mujer, sino habemos variedad de mujeres, y en esa relación es que nosotras estamos encontrando la construcción de una propuesta de alternativa, de suma causa y, como queremos llamarle, de socialismo, pero donde asumimos que sin ese feminismo y sin esa condición de clase y de género no es posible construir otro país diferente.
Igualmente, de acuerdo a cada contexto donde se gestan estas organizaciones, cabe resaltar los conceptos y los ejes que proyectan, como la sororidad de la que hablan las compañeras del Movimiento de Mujeres por la Vida de Venezuela, un término que apropian y significan como la solidaridad y la amistad entre las mujeres como una alternativa necesaria frente a la competencia que todavía se ve al interior de las organizaciones.
Es importante para nosotras hablar de lo que yo desde ayer decía en la ritualidad de la amistad entre mujeres, los espacios de encuentro entre mujeres. La esencia y la importancia de la amistad entre mujeres, que es lo que nos va a llevar a romper con el patriarcado.
La exposición de estas experiencias fue un primer momento que se desarrolló durante la mañana. En la tarde, las participantes se agruparon por países para dialogar y debatir si las luchas de mujeres organizadas corresponden o se identifican con la denominación de feminismos populares. Por supuesto, este cuestionamiento no solo permitió conocer las formas de trabajo y de organización de estos procesos, sino que más allá logró llegarse a un análisis sobre los conceptos en sí mismos del feminismo y de los feminismos populares. Hubo opiniones diversas. Se manifestó que más allá de aceptar o no la denominación de feminismos, está la realidad de la dominación a las que todas las mujeres hacemos resistencia sin importar de dónde venimos. Es decir, todas las mujeres venimos de las luchas populares que enfrentan el sistema establecido por estructuras de dominación como el capitalismo, el colonialismo y el patriarcado.
¡Mujeres y hombres luchando en equidad! ¡Así se construye!
Informó Yurani Mena del tejido de comunicación desde el Encuentro de Feminismos y Mujeres Populares en San José de Puembo.
En Argentina se realizó el segundo encuentro de ferias francas y mercados solidarios, una expresión de soberanía alimentaria. El reporte con Patricia Valdivia del Instituto de Cultura Popular.
2.500 agricultores familiares, venidos de todos los puntos de la Argentina, trayendo los sabores y colores del campo, alimentos sanos, directo del productor al consumidor, y además a precio justo, son una muestra concreta de soberanía alimentaria. Esa fue la fiesta que se vivió en el segundo Encuentro Nacional de Ferias Francas y Mercados Solidarios, que se realizó en la ciudad de Corrientes, al noreste de la República Argentina. Son años los que las familias campesinas vienen trabajando para hacer crecer su producción. Este esfuerzo hoy es apoyado en parte por el Estado, como lo expresan las palabras de Emilio Pérsico, subsecretario de Agricultura Familiar de la Nación.
En cada compañero que con su tablón sale a la plaza a vender y se organiza en las ferias francas, se organiza en las organizaciones, participa en la producción, organiza una cooperativa, esos compañeros para nosotros son parte del Estado. No podemos dividir Estado y organizaciones. Somos parte de lo mismo.
Eugenio Casalaba, uno de los fundadores del movimiento de ferias francas en la provincia de Misiones, valora los avances, pero sabe que falta mucho y toma como ejemplo países vecinos como Brasil.
Prioridad al pequeño agricultor en Argentina era lo nuestro, nuestro sueño de hace más de 40 años, que nos den bolilla, como decimos los misioneros, para que la agricultura familiar exista. Hay mucho todavía para crecer, hay mucho para luchar y para trabajar.
Faltan todavía políticas concretas que apuesten por fortalecer de forma permanente las economías regionales. Así lo expresa Miguel Fernández, presidente del Foro Nacional de la Agricultura Familiar.
El precio en el cual hoy están vendiendo aquí los productos, todos lo vamos a buscar en la góndola y vamos a ver que hay hasta un 80% en algunos de diferencia. Y eso es lo que estamos buscando a través de esto. Una red de comercialización nacional para que nuestros productos que se vendan nos quede a nosotros la renta y no que los que son intermediarios se queden con la plata de nosotros llevando nuestro esfuerzo.
Para repoblar el campo y fortalecer a la agricultura familiar, falta además asegurar otras condiciones, como la propiedad de la tierra de las familias campesinas y también frenar la avanzada de monocultivos como la soja, que hoy ocupa más del 50% de las tierras cultivables de la Argentina. Y ellos sí que van por más, informó Patricia Valdivia del Instituto de Cultura Popular.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides. It's June 6th, and don't forget it, 2013. Stay tuned.
The question, who owns a land? The homeless, our problem, for only one reason. A president raises the question, who owns a land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Maybe it's not the cold war.
Yeah, that was Land by 15. Theme song I used to use lots back in the day and put on in some desperation these days. Welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. This is a two-hour show. Going to be covering, playing some tape from the Bradley Manning protest last Saturday. Going to be doing some updates. There's probably updates from the Bradley Manning trial, which is in its third day, or had its third day. Maybe it was its fourth day. This is Thursday. I think it started on Monday, so it must be its fourth day. A lot of that is online, and so I'm probably not going to give too much attention to that, more to the interviews that I usually put out. We made our way to the Red Church. I, myself, and me went down there and chatted with a bunch of folks at the Red Church, got some interviews, and I'll be playing those, as well as a few other num-nums. Tomorrow I will be going to court in San Jose to watch my two attorneys argue that the trial of the two mayors was improper. I should say the verdict should be thrown out and a new trial begun. That's the trial of the famous mock Nazi salute case, which I've talked about periodically over the last 11 years. Other updates, just briefly before I begin, I met with Councilmember Posner today. Not quite sure exactly how that happened. I'm not sure if he called me or I called him, or if it was sort of secondary. In any case, I encouraged him to not only vote strongly against the two anti-homeless measures coming up on Tuesday at the Santa Cruz City Council, the Thou Shalt Not Have a First Amendment on the Median and in the Roundabouts law, as well as the Stay Away from the Parks, You Dirty Homeless People, or We Will Put You in Jail for a Year if You violate Our Stay Away Order, which we give without any kind of conviction or court hearing. That's what that second law is. It's a 24-hour stay-away order from the parks issued by police on the event of an infraction being issued, any infraction whatsoever. I couldn't persuade Micah that this was a very bad process, had nothing to do with avoiding the courts, as he suggested it did when he talked about it last city council meeting. He suggested he thought it was a way of avoiding a court process. I pointed out that it required a court process. You had to have a citation which would take someone to court. And then, worse, you'd get an even more serious charge if you didn't stay away for a day or didn't leave quickly enough. Also, there's a second section of that same ordinance that says that bans harassing, molesting, interfering with park employees. And I pointed out that this whole process gave great power to the police and to parks employees because it was very vague. It wasn't a matter, of any kind of particular assaults or refusal to leave or forbidden area, which is already a crime, but any kind of lack of cooperation with a city employee, which may or may not be against the law at the present time, is now up to a year in jail and $1,000 fine, and stay away from the park for a day as well after we've cited you, even if you haven't been found guilty of anything. They say they got this law from San Jose. I'm trying to make inquiries into San Jose to see how well it's worked over there. That's something we got no information on from the staff member, Scott Collins, or from the council members who presented this, or from Micah Posner, for that matter. But there it is, coming up for a second reading. It passed heavily, both the Median Madness Ordinance and the Prejudice in the Parks Ordinance passed 5-2 and 6-1, and they're coming up again. And it's not that they're not going to pass. They will, unfortunately, barring revolution or invasion by Turkey or Turkish masses. Long live the Turkish people. But rather, it's best, the actual raising of the issues in a strong way exposes just how subservient the majority of the council is to the kind of right-wing staff, police, take back Santa Cruz mentality that is covering the town like a dark cloud these days. It's always infected law enforcement. It's always been at the bottom of the staff stuff. But it hasn't, it renewed its assault, at least recently, until, public safety committees that are coming out with these new bad ordinances. And bad stuff. So let's go back, though, to Bradley Manning on Saturday, the demonstration, I should say, at the town clock about Bradley Manning. In case you want to call into the show, you're invited to do that, 427-3772. 427-FRSC is the phone number here. And I will answer, and you will talk if you wish, and there'll be more than one voice on the air, and that'll be cool. I want more than one live voice. Going to hear some recorded voices now.
Out there. Yeah. All right, thank you.
This is Walt, who organized the Bradley Manning protest. I wouldn't say single-handedly. It was quite an operation. Had a bike guy, a number of people on bikes supplying energy for the speakers. It had people setting up. It had Food Not Bombs providing some food. Had all kinds of folks on the periphery, some great signs. Not as big a crowd as showed up at the Dykes rally that followed, for sure. But a big rally nonetheless. So good work, guys and gals. And let's hear some of the speeches and interviews that happened there.
Yeah. While thinking about the amount of money this country's been spending on war, I came across a quote from President Dwight D. Eisenhower. 50 years ago, he said, "Every gun that's made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It's spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this: a modern brick school in more than 30 cities. It's two electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It's two fine, fully equipped hospitals. It's some 50 miles of concrete pavement. We pay for a single fighter plane with 500,000 bushels of wheat. We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people. This is, I repeat, the best way of life to be found on the road the world's been taking. But this is not a way of life at all in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it's humanity hanging from a cross of iron." End quote. An update of those numbers made last year found the relative cost of weapons has increased. A modern stealth bomber now costs not 30, but nearly 100 modern schools. The cost of a new destroyer could provide homes for not 8,000, but 40,000 people. We wonder why there are so many homeless and are told there's no money. I say we need new priorities. Last year, we learned that one soldier in Afghanistan costs $1 million per year. That cost could have kept 20 teachers or firefighters on the job at $50,000 per year. Gasoline transported across Afghanistan last year cost $400 per gallon, and it's a lot higher this year. A government report entitled Warlord Incorporated, released last June, showed how we've paid not only private contractors delivering the gas, but bribes to warlords and even the Taliban, who are reportedly the enemy. In other words, we've been paying both sides in order to keep the war going. We keep hearing we need to cut the budget. I would agree that we ought to stop wasting hundreds of billions of dollars every year on overseas wars. But I learned a long time ago that simply cutting expenses doesn't pay debts. It's necessary to increase income, too. We've got to tax the rich who can most afford it. Someone once asked a bank robber named Willie Sutton why he robbed banks. He said, "Because that's where the money is." That's still true, but they're not alone. Last year, General Electric had profits of roughly $14 billion and not only paid no taxes on that, but received a tax credit of $3.3 billion. After being bailed out by taxpayers, Wall Street roared back and was again handing out record bonuses. Last year, one hedge fund manager alone collected compensation of $4.9 billion. That's with a B, billion dollars, to one guy. That's utterly obscene. We should raise the top tax rate to at least 90%. Even that would leave that manager roughly $490 million, almost $10 million per week, which ought to be more than enough. Yet Republicans want to lower the top rate from its present 35% to 25%. Just a few decades ago, the top tax bracket really was 91%. Because of that, we had a period of national prosperity that saw the creation of the interstate highway system, free public schools that were the envy of the world, families supported by a single paycheck, reasonable health care, and virtually no homelessness. Then came that spokesman for General Electric, Ronald Reagan, who as governor of California cut the state budget and forced many Californians to begin living on the streets. When Reagan became president, the policy and problems were carried to the national level. We've since had increasing insecurity and fear for too many in our society and galloping greed at the top. 1% have acquired more wealth than the lower half of our citizens and often pay little or no taxes. Leona Helmsley said, before she went to jail, taxes are for the little people. Warren Buffett, one of the richest men in the country, admitted that his tax rate was lower than his secretary's. People blame one another for our problems without considering who's paying the taxes. And not only that, we are the ones who build and staff the schools and hospitals in every community. We pave the roads. We keep the phone lines up and their computers running. We drill the oil their trucks burn and their traders manipulate. We grow and prepare their food. We haul away their trash, and we die in their coal mines. Without the workers in this country, the Wall Streeters would soon starve. Yet they continue to squeeze us to make us pay for the bonus they get for shipping good jobs overseas. We really need new priorities in this country. We need to investigate information leaked by whistleblowers and prosecute the criminals exposed by such leaks. Thanks to WikiLeaks, we now have evidence of illegal torture and killing that must not be allowed to simply fade away and become accepted as standard operating procedure. As it is, we hardly notice that people have been held without trial at Guantanamo now nearly 10 years. At the Quantico Brig, accused whistleblower Bradley Manning has now been in solitary confinement more than 9 months and forced to sleep under bright lights and to respond every 5 minutes throughout the night. The government may be trying to drive him crazy, but they're also distracting the rest of us from prosecuting the crimes exposed by WikiLeaks. Let's push for investigation of those crimes. And if Bradley Manning turns out to be the source of some of those leaks, let's thank him for opening our eyes and reward him for the harsh treatment he suffered.
All right.
There is no need for nearly 1,000 U.S. military bases in roughly 100 countries around the world. No need for military facilities or suppliers in every state. No need for 1,000-degree temperatures of nuclear power to boil water. No need for thousands of nuclear bombs. No need to maintain and expand the most powerful military the world has ever known. No need to pay both sides to keep the wars going. These things are being done to create an endless war for the steady source of profit it brings corporations. There are more beneficial products to be made than weaponry. Let's push our government to foster employment of people putting solar panels on every roof, installing small windmills all around the country, building more efficient vehicles and houses, building better schools, developing a peaceful economy that doesn't rely on imported oil or dangerous nukes, and doesn't require continual fear or military might. We need a Manhattan Project like the one that developed the atomic bomb to implement these things now, to beat the corporate swords into peaceful plowshares, to grow a green, sustainable economy, and a better world for us all. We need new priorities.
Yes, indeed, Walt. All right, Walt.
Anyone else who'd like to take the mic is more than welcome to do so.
Go ahead, Robert.
It's a hard one to follow. It's very
hard. Downtown!
All right, we could have a little song here.
What's this?
We could. We could sing part of it, yeah.
We sang it for the city council, why not sing it for the people?
Am I audible during this? I want to first of all thank particularly Walt for this is not the first nor the second. It might not even be the third. I think it's at least the fourth rally here at the town block, which he really that's really a major part of doing. So let's hear it for Walt. Hey.
And it sounds like yours truly as a great speech, I know, because I heard it up close, but a very bad recording position. I think the tape recorder was badly placed. Unfortunate, because after all, you're going to miss one of the great speeches of history, mine. But nonetheless, since you hear enough of me, or perhaps not, let's turn for the moment, let's skip ahead to some street interviews. I think these are from 2 days later, Monday, June 3rd, at the Red Church. And these are the voices of people who aren't just making speeches, but are talking candidly about what's been happening to them. or at least that's what I hope we've got coming up here. And let's make sure we have the right tape. That's always a can be an issue in the in these circumstances. Ah, yes, I see. Sorry about that, folks. Let's see. I think this is the proper tape. Let's do it.
I'm down here at the Red Church. It's June 3rd, 2013. We're talking around 5:20, and I'm talking with
Christina Roach
and her pooch,
Princess Warrior Zena.
And how do you two? I see you're all dressed in purple, at least somewhat.
I try to keep her warm. She has cold, skinny dog disease.
And she has a purple coat on, or a purple shirt on, or
hoodie.
It's a hoodie. Is she a gang?
Homeless people wear a lot of hoodies.
It's a gang color thing.
No, no.
She's a gang dog, a gang banger. Perhaps.
Yeah, she's a shot caller.
I see.
Yeah.
And so you were saying you have some thoughts.
Crap. Okay. So. What are the state parks? The state parks came to the shelter today, and I got through the grapevine that I guess that they can hold our things for 90 days and want the shelter to take them from that. But yet the shelter won't let us keep our stuff there. So how does that work?
In other words, are they saying that if they find your stuff and confiscate it, they want to give it to the shelter to hold? Or?
Yeah, after 90 days, because they're running out of room, supposedly.
But they're doing too much theft of homeless property?
Right, right. But we can't keep it there. The shelter won't let us do that. So how does that work?
Well, maybe the state is going to pay the shelter so they have more motivation. I don't know. Did you what did the authorities over there say, if anything?
It was you would have to talk to Tony Moore. But
who's Tony Moore?
No, Tony Roach. Talk to him more. I knew
which one is he? What is he?
The one in the blue.
Oh, okay.
The movie star that you talked to for the last 2 weeks.
The movie star.
He doesn't shut up.
Oh, well, yeah. What can I say?
He's a car guy, so he doesn't shut up.
Has your stuff been confiscated at all?
They took my bong a couple weeks ago. They took my tarp. They took all my kitchen stuff. And they flipped my whole entire tent and everything that was in it and ripped my tent.
Yeah. I remember, I think we were talking here about this spot 2 weeks ago, and you tried to get it back and haven't been able to, or what?
No, I haven't even bothered with it. I can't go collect a bong.
Well, if you have a medical marijuana card, a purchase of only $125, and then a doctor's recommendation, where do you pay for them?
$420-some.
Well, I think you got to get a recommendation from a doctor, which costs $75 to $100, and then you don't have to go to this to get a state card, but apparently they want you to.
You can go to San Jose and let them know that you have anxiety, don't sleep well, don't eat well, or bipolar, or in pain, and pay $60 and have it just right then.
Where should people go to do that?
Anywhere at the weed clubs.
At the who clubs?
The newspaper in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called the
Metro.
Yeah, the Metro. In the back of that paper.
There's a series of advertisements.
Yeah. It tells you what you need to do to get it, and it's verifiable and all that. And it's like $50, $60 tops.
Okay. Have you done that yourself?
I'm working on that.
Okay.
Because I have all of those things I just said.
I gotcha. I know there's been a court ruling, a state court ruling, that allows local jurisdictions to regulate, and San Jose is trying to regulate, meaning cut back the number of clubs, and I don't know quite what's happening with that yet.
There's hella clubs. You can go to an app called Weed Clubs, and you can download every app on the United States.
What about police in Santa Cruz? How are they treating you?
I had an incident, actually, was it yesterday or the day before, with Hoppy. Always my first encounter with Hoppy. I've heard lots of crap about him, how he's an asshole and all that. But we were cooking. We weren't doing anything. We had an open beer, and he decided he was going to write a ticket to my friend for $100-something for having an open container.
Where was this?
Behind the tannery. And we were using the beer to cook with. And so I just decided to be a really cool pain in the ass. I offered to paint his nails a few times. Yes, I did.
Did he pick you up on that?
Actually, he told me next time he needed a polish, he would totally come see me.
But he was didn't deter him from giving a harassment ticket to your friend?
Absolutely not, because, you know, it's really weird, because we had two people downstairs from the tannery. that both did nothing but praise us because we were cool with music, we don't leave trash, we clean up our mess, we don't do drugs out there, nothing.
That's the place where you camp? Sleep at night?
Yeah, somewhere in that vicinity, yes. And he still proceeded to give us a ticket.
Did he give you a legal place to go sleep?
No, I did not ask at that time.
But he didn't offer you a legal place?
No.
Did he say there had been a complaint?
No, and from the tenants that spoke to Hoppy, were very happy with us being there. They had no problems with us being there at all.
Hoppy's response to that, to those statements by the other people?
He still continued to write a ticket. Other than that, that's it.
I see. Well, there you have it. officialdom strikes again. We've been talking with
Christina Roach.
Christina, if you want to get in touch with Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, meet every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 2 o'clock. And, you know, also you wanted to get the ticket dismissed. What's the ticket was for open container, though, right?
Correct. And, again, that beer was being used for cooking.
You know, it's conceivable you might argue that, you know, in court, although I'm sure that, well, who knows? He might not show up in court. Here is meeting times, in case you're interested, and good luck.
Thank you. You have an awesome day.
You too. Well, we're talking with
Tony Roach.
Tony, we just heard sort of a description of the incident from your associate here.
The incident.
Well,
that's
the
fine.
Serious cooking cooking incident.
Let's see. I went and spent $78 on briquettes and mashed potatoes and organic stuff and corn on the cob, and we bought some ribs and chicken and some tri-tip. And I bought a little bit of Pabst beer and soda, and you know, we had a picnic. There's a barbecue by the river with a picnic table. We always camp there, cook food there.
Revealing so. Your camping site, eh?
Well, no, we don't camp actually there, but we actually, you know, we hang out there for a couple
there.
Hours. Yeah, and the tenants and stuff like us. They actually come down and say, hey, it's awesome because we pick up everything. I'm really anal about the cigarette butts and all that junk. So,
epidermic needles.
Well,
have you
some
seen any needles? Brother?
Yeah, we found my dog sat on a needle over by in the flats by the.
Your dog tested?
No, she didn't get poked. It was cool. I saw her, so you know, I mean, I just lifted her up, and it was a. Anyway, we got rid of it.
Call Take Back Santa Cruz and get a $10 reward.
No,
just kidding.
No, I didn't do any of that. I just went and got rid of it, so that somebody and the person I gave it to owned a motel because there's no garbage cans on the street at all, and
garbage containers, perhaps.
Nothing. There's nothing. You know what I mean? So we gave it to the lady that runs a motel there, and she yelled at the person for giving it to her. We don't want that. It was just like, look, I just found it out here. Is it on my property? I don't care. I don't want it here. And she's like, you can't bring
a public-spirited motel owner.
I don't know. I don't get it.
Perhaps manager.
I'm sorry. So we left it for a kid to pick up.
Disgruntled needle user. You found her needle. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. It was really weird. A policeman on a quad drove by our campsite. Or I keep calling it campsite, but that's when I sit and eat food with my friends, and we camp, you know, we chill out. Man, I got my flip-flops, and we listen to music, and you know, whatever we eat, and then we clean up everything, and I go home.
Fair enough.
This policeman drove by on a quad.
Officer Hoppy?
Yeah, it was Hoppy. Somebody else said that. I've never met him before, so he drove by, kind of eyeballed us, and kept going, and he was gone for a little while, and all of my stuff's cooking, and there was one Pabst can on the picnic bench, and another one that wasn't open, just one, and I was using it for actually to cook with on my ribs and stuff.
Did you take a sip out of that
can? Yeah, I don't know if I drank one out of that can, but I did. There was more than one Pabst can, but there was only one on the picnic table, and one two small cans.
Over 65?
Yeah.
I don't know if you're past the age. You're not. You got to wait.
The age of drinking
for homeless is higher than the ordinary. We have to be
careful. I'm still a person. I still have family and children.
Indeed you do. We're trying to protect you from yourself and your alcoholic tendencies.
Right. Hence
the $100, $200, $300 ticket. I'm not sure how much it is.
I don't drink I don't have problems when I drink. I have a couple of four beers.
Alcohol in your breath? I don't see.
No, I don't. I drink maybe once or twice a week, maybe.
Beer into your questionable cooking activity.
A lot of my stuff, bratwurst, a lot of stuff that I cook, I use wine and beer.
Officer Hoppy, or this individual officer you read about,
said, hey, what's with the beers? And John, a guy named John that we, is a good friend of mine that was eating with us. In fact, he brought the tri-tip and the, some of the goodies that we had, chips and dip and a whole bunch of stuff. So he brought some of that stuff and the music, and we were listening to music, and he just jumped in and said, hey, it was all my fault, they're mine, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, I can't cook with beer. I mean, like, well, you can't have beer. I'm like, this is a picnic spot with a picnic table with a barbecue that somebody built to use by the river.
Oh, trying to argue with the police officer.
Well, not really. And he was like, well, and I'm like, well, you know, I don't understand that. Everybody here is well over 21. Nobody's making any noise. And during this time, a resident from right there along the river came down and said, I just wanted to tell you that these guys are great. And they're super respectful. They're always welcome here. And we have never had any problems.
Challenging the officer's judgment. And this is a serious
thing. It was a really nice black lady. She said, if there's anything I have to say about it, I just wanted to tell you that. And she's like, you guys are okay in my book. And
yeah,
she
shut up, nigger, and continue what he
no, was. No, I didn't say anything like that.
Not you, the officer.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just really kind of creepy. I mean, I thought policemen and that type of stuff are supposed to make good judgment calls. You know, I mean, I get that you can't send a guy home if he's drinking and driving and he, you know, he's smashed drunk and you pull him over. It's the law now. You got to take him to jail. But at one point, like, the officer was able to use his better judgment and make a call and say, oh, you're a block from the house, and say, okay, we don't want to wreck this guy's life. He's probably got to go to work in the morning. We'll give him a chance or whatever, or but to walk by. I mean, there was nothing that the
police department is rational and reasonable.
The first time he drove by, there was watermelon.
Fool you.
I don't know. This is weird. So, whatever. I'm going to go to work and get to vote here. I'm going to become watch. I got to get my stuff from Reno.
Try cooking with beer again. Okay.
You know, I pay $1,200 a month in child support, and I managed to save like $1,100 and take care of my dog and my wife, help my friends. And I'm going to have a job here.
Well, we at least heard some of that interview. Again, my apologies for the transmission problems. I think it is equipment problem again, sadly enough. But luckily, we can return now to the Bradley Manning protest, because I believe the hard-to-hear, if not inaudible, speech by that great speaker, Robert Norris, has passed, and we're going to be getting into the more audible interviews at that Saturday protest. Bradley Manning, for those who don't know, and I imagine that's probably few people who listen to this program, is a soldier who blew the whistle on the various illegal and murderous activities of the U.S. military in Iraq and elsewhere, in revealing a whole trove of low-level classified information. And that has resulted in his being held for 3 years and now going to trial for, it's not quite treason, aiding the enemy, I'm not sure, spying. I guess I should probably read from one of the more specifics in the stories, but right now it's a bad trial. And it's... The real news of the day that came out this morning is, of course, the huge number of spying, the records that the government is actually acquiring and compiling and filing on ordinary people with absolutely no criminal suspicion, just as a matter of course, as to who they're calling, what numbers they're dialing, when, putting into a huge database. Another problem a couple days ago was a Supreme Court's 5-4 ruling that DNA swabs on arrest were just fine because they were like modern-day fingerprints. Of course, they're not. They reveal a great deal about people, much more than fingerprints. And if they were simply for ID purposes, it would be considerably different. The arguments are that, oh, they help us solve crimes because then we can run around and check things and look for crimes in people's backgrounds, other unsolved crimes, all without a search warrant or even probable cause to stop and question a person or actually to arrest a person. That's another thing that's happened in the last week. Strangely enough, I guess it was Alito. Was it Alito? A normally conservative justice was a great center on this issue, and Breyer, a liberal justice, supported the 5 and the 5-4 majority. I don't think it was Alito. I think it was another one of the justices whose name escapes me at the moment. Anyway, let's take a musical break. This is from the Zuccotti Confidential, an online sequence of Occupy Wall Street-inspired songs, which I began to play a few shows back, and I'll continue to play probably until there ain't no songs to play no more. Kind of like them, and maybe you will too. And dedicating this, of course, to the Turkish patriots who are standing up against police abuse in the various cities in Turkey, even as I speak.
There have been no change in the menu except somebody warned me that that possibly was happening. I better go research this.
Yeah, I just talked to them and that's what they said they're doing.
Thank you. Coming the herd with no food.
You realize what that it says, lie down with war.
Well, it does say that in one respect, but fuck has many different meanings.
And we're talking about my fuck war T-shirt, which was created by Richard Quigley, activist who died half a dozen years ago, who was famous for refusing to wear a motorcycle helmet and demanding the right of anyone to wear it or not to wear it as she or he wished. He was also an outspoken supporter of, an opponent of absurd laws and police practices, particularly, for example, 20 years ago when Sandra Loringer, a homeless activist, actually an antique dealer downtown who was supporting homeless people, fed people at the town clock as part of a protest run by Jane Immler, Calamity Jane, as we called her, Linda Edwards, Linda the Lark, as I called her, and a whole bunch of other folks, including Huffsters and Food Not Bomb people. And we were arrested for it. We were tried for it. No one was convicted for it except Sandra Loringer and another man called Brian Staley. But Sandra Loringer, Brian Staley, I think, did a hunger fast in jail, I think, even prior to his conviction, and he ultimately was released. Sandra Loringer became famous because when she was tried in the summer of 1989 and embarrassing then-Mayor Marty Wormhout with with her statement, the case made headlines, or at least little stories on the front pages of papers all over the world, including, and I think I was told it was 8 different newspapers in India. And she made a statement at trial after Judge Artichoke Hart Attuck convicted her and said that he would give her probation if she would promise to obey all laws, which meant, she asked, does that mean not serving people food or making them sandwiches? And he said, yes. And she said, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I believe I am beyond rehabilitation. And that was what was written on her T-shirt. I still have the ragged remains of that T-shirt. And Richard Quigley was the guy who created the T-shirt, as well as a couple years later when the elder Bush got us into another war with Iraq after misleading the Iraqi government, the Hussein, Saddam Hussein government, into believing they could invade Kuwait without U.S. activity. He produced a Fuck War t-shirt, which they did not allow him to sell at the farmer's market, the farmer's market that used to be held at the drive-in theater. But I'm not quite sure what the outcome of that was. He had another one, Make Love, Fuck War. I might have even had that shirt at one point, but I just have the Fuck War t-shirt, which is what I was wearing at the Red Church. And that's it became a subject of a couple of comments by people who were interviewed, and that's what you just heard referenced. That took quite a long time to tell you, but who knows? Maybe you learned something as I spoke about it. Again, if you want to call in and talk about anything you're hearing, if you have any reports about how people are being treated outside, how you're being treated, about police are treating folks, whether good or bad, or announcements about upcoming events that you think the community needs to hear about, call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772.
I'm using it as it's actually used from the Latin and German.
Well, you have historic roots. I can say,
what's this about happening?
Well, Father Joel is doing a service inside, and it looks like a much thinned crowd, although it is the beginning of the month. And it's interesting that apparently there's a new process going on here.
Any street reports, guys?
So apparently there's a practical decision because of costs that food will no longer be served till the fall.
No, it has nothing to do with cost. It has to do with the fact that the folks who were running the kitchen will be away for the summer.
I see.
And so we couldn't find somebody to do all the work necessary to get ready, which includes both ordering and picking stuff up and planning meals and then cooking the meal. We couldn't get a reliable video. We're still looking, but for right now, it's just we're taking a little summer recess. There'll be the usual donuts and coffee for the meal, and we're going to head like tonight. We have eggs.
For the non-meal, yeah.
And we have bagels. We have bagels with the cream cheese and egg, and we have some ham and cheese and stuff.
Right, a limited sort of meal.
Yeah, limited sort.
So it's a little hard to hear with the prickly in the recording, but for those who are using those services, apparently it's going to be donuts and coffee before the service or during the service, and after the service, bagels and cream cheese and spread as usual with maybe some ham and cheese sandwiches. So there will be some food every Monday between 5 and 7. That's also the time when in the past, well, at least the past few weeks, the Occupy Santa Cruz Homelessness Working Group, or Homeless Working Group, has actually, or Homeless Justice Working Group, I'm sorry, is what it's called, has been showing up there and letting people know what's cooking, I believe, that or what's not cooking in this case. What's cooking elsewhere, what kind of activities the shitty council is up to. And indeed, I've heard that Catch as Catch Can, Colin Campbell Clyde, will be at the Red Church this Monday. I heard some rumors of puppet shows and things, although I don't know. It's not clear what's coming up there, but I know Colin is concerned about the upcoming Tuesday passage of these anti-homeless laws. The law is going after panhandlers, standing on the medians of different boulevards in Santa Cruz, Ocean Street particularly. But, of course, it will impact everybody. You will not be allowed to stand there with a political sign, which sounds like a violation of the First Amendment. But it's all for your own safety. So even though they have no incidents where anyone was actually hit, are there any accidents? And this was pointed out by council members Lane and Posner, or possibly I and others pointed it out, and they noted it as well, or at least they opposed the law when it came up. And it also received some sarcastic treatment yesterday from the Santa Cruz Weekly. Good for the Weekly. I was sufficiently encouraged by that, thinking that even though as I'm almost surely this law will pass a second reading. All laws in Santa Cruz require two readings at City Council, usually 2 weeks apart. And then a month after the second reading, the law goes into effect, for those who are interested in knowing when they're going to be able to grab you for holding up a Make Love, Fuck War sign on the median, or whatever it is, you know, a Stop Monsanto, or, you know, To Hell with the Oil Pipeline, or Bring the Troops Home. All that will be illegal on the medians. You can stand off to the side now, but make sure you stand in the proper places. And because, you see, we want to take care of your safety. Actually, of course, they want to get rid of panhandlers, and that was pointed out by those two council members. And it's also, of course, true, they point out that they're already, it's already illegal, ironically, to hold up signs that appeal to people in vehicles. It's probably unconstitutional to hold up signs asking for money, but it is. That's part of the worsened anti-panhandling law that was modified in 2002 and 2003 to make it illegal to hold up a sign, let's say, after dark, asking for money, or within 14 feet of a building in a business district or a beach district or a commercial district. And a bunch of other places as well, at a bus stop, and to, either to or from a vehicle. I mean, it's pretty preposterous. I've never heard of anybody being prosecuted for panhandling with a sign peacefully and silently. But it's illegal. So if they really, if they wanted to, they could try to go after it. This, however, has a more... The real intention is to move people away without legally charging them by essentially threatening them with the removal of their rights. This has become the new strategy, the sort of nose-in-the-tent approach. You know, if a camel wants to get into the tent, first she puts her nose in, then she puts the rest of her head in, then eventually she ends up in the tent. You don't even notice her because you become so accustomed to it, like the lobster in the hot water. You know, first it's warm, then it's a little warmer, then it boils, and then you're cooked. And that's what's happening with these laws, and the idea here is to get people to police themselves so that they don't assert their rights in all kinds of places in Santa Cruz, because the police officers and the downtown association, the hosts, the Santa Cruz neighbors, the Chamber of Commerce don't want them to, and don't want to see visible poverty in Santa Cruz, because it they fear it turns off the tourists and it enrages certain segments of the neighborhood who are shaking their cans of needles around as a way of trying to stir up people's fears. It has very little to do with any of the real problems in Santa Cruz, except there's insufficiently funded needle exchange, an insufficient number of sharps containers, and obviously an insufficient number of drug rehabilitation centers, as Steve Plaich pointed out in a recent letter. I guess it was in today's Good Times. So, anyway, at the Red Church, there is less food, but there may be some theater. There may be, there'll be probably Huff will probably be doing some organizing there because of the upcoming Tuesday meeting. And it's, as I said, I had a meeting with Micah Posner today to talk to him about the, trying to encourage him to speak out more clearly on this issue, as he had on the median issue. But he somehow is really conflicted about it. He feels... It gives me a sort of a hollow feeling in my stomach talking to him about this issue, because it seems to me very clear, and it seems to me the only way one can only get muddled if one has really badly skewed priorities that have to do with pleasing other city council members, not exhausting all your political capital, not doing what's right because you think that, you know, if you can, you should reserve it for another time. And also, just having a really confused and rather distorted perspective on what's likely to happen if it becomes a year-in-jail, $1,000 crime if you don't follow the orders of a park employee, or if you are accused of harassing that employee or interfering with them, even though those charges are not, I mean, those terms are not defined in the ordinance. And then if you don't leave the park for 24 hours, even if you haven't been convicted of anything other than given a ticket, let's say, for smoking, you can be sent to jail for a year. I mean, this is outrageous. And the fact that I couldn't get him to join in this, I mean, it would be fine to say, I agree with you, but, you know, I can't do anything, which would be not true also. I mean, I think city council members who oppose these things do something, even if they lose the vote. They speak up. And his problem is, I think he wants to be friends with everybody as usual. That's the problem with Micah. I don't know. I'm still trying to work it out, because I did think that the fact that there were a number of emails that came in because Micah did oppose the median ordinance, and there was, he did apparently either persuaded Lane or Lane was persuaded that's council member and former mayor Don Lane, to also oppose the ordinance, speak about it, and also point out that this is an anti-homeless law, or at least an anti-panhandler law that's really masquerading as a public safety law. And this gets down to the really core issue. We have a whole series of charges, reports, task forces, committees that are using the label of public safety to conceal a much more malicious and targeted agenda against homeless people. It, you know, it's malicious, I guess, that might not be the right word. Malice isn't really, I mean, people don't like being panhandled. I don't like being panhandled often. People don't like finding needles around. I don't like that either. I found one for the first time in my 20, 30-odd years here. But, you know, that doesn't mean that there's suddenly a public safety crisis, particularly if you're not really going after things like rapes and assaults and you're filling the jail with victimless crimes, homeless people, probation offenses, which simply involve not reporting to your probation officer in the correct manner or not being able to find a proper place to stay. I mean, there's a huge industry in jailing people. And, of course, it's all very racially biased, too, although there hasn't been much, and there should be some study on how this works in Santa Cruz, both in terms of marijuana prosecutions. There was a story last few days in the Sentinel. Well, I think it was referred to in the Sentinel, but a longer story, I believe, in the Chronicle, which talked about how San Francisco has four times as many blacks and Latinos jailed for marijuana offenses, yet they use marijuana at the same rate as whites. How strange. I guess, you know, they're just unlucky. I guess that must be it. And we need similar surveys down here to see what's going on down here. And who knows, maybe Sin Baras, which is a group that's working on prison abolition and or prison reform and trying to look at the impacts of the privatization of the health services or whatever there really are in the jails. They keep them alive so we don't get sued, but don't give them anything that, you know, we don't have to. Privatized medical services are doing when you have four deaths in the last year in these jails. There's going to be some meetings on Saturday, as there have been for the last half year at the post office, when Food Not Bombs is serving. Actually, it's served for a couple of months there at 4 o'clock. And Occupy Santa Cruz, or those who are still hanging into that Occupy Santa Cruz activity, will show up at 5:30. But sometime in that area, I think Huff will probably bring down a table or at least have some representatives there urging people to oppose the anti-homeless laws, trying to figure out what to do in the broader campground crisis where people are facing, they face ongoing on-again, off-again harassment from the police for survival sleeping, which I've talked about before. It's hard for me really to get a clear focus on whether the ratcheting up doesn't happen all at once. They tighten up, they loosen a little. They tighten up some more, they loosen a little more. And, you know, sometimes it goes with the tourist seasons and clearing things before the tourists come around. Sometimes it seems to be a response to right-wing NIMBY groups like the Santa Cruz Neighbors and Take Back Santa Cruz. But there is now a majority on the Santa Cruz City Council, which is firmly entrenched in the public hysteria mythology, which has public safety masquerading as a real problem, when it really is a cover for simply anti-homeless activity, which has become the scapegoat for a lot of these folks, or for a number of these groups, and for the Santa Cruz City Council majority. So let's hear some more. See if this tape gives us trouble. If not, if it does, we will skip around and do what we can to provide you with actual interviews you can hear.
So right now that's the way it is, but the problem is we have all the staff and volunteers. So people go away, family obligations this summer, and they won't be there. So it makes no difference, sir, when they don't have to volunteer.
Oh, for sure. We've been talking with
Scott Galloway. And Scott, I noticed today is the beginning of the month. There are fewer people here.
Actually, I've talked to a couple people, and they say it's unfortunate that that's not happening, but they also are pleased that you're continuing to provide a, you know, a meeting point,
yeah, we'll
sanctuary point in a way, you know.
Right, we're still working on it, and it's, you know, this is always a work of love in progress. You need volunteers when you do this sort of thing, and people volunteer 52 weeks a year to be here, and need a vacation just like paid workers. You know?
Indeed.
That's the problem.
Any reports you have from the street or things you think that people should know who are listening to the radio show?
And before we hear from Scott on that, and he's a regular worker with the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church, the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom organization, over my dissent, actually, I didn't approve of it myself, wants, I think, to, if they can, organize some kind of support for restoring the meal at the Red Church, either by cooking the food or getting the food cooked by somebody else and supplying it, or volunteering to be a part of that whole process. And I think that's being looked into. I think it's, in a way, it's a commendable effort, certainly, you know, and it's also being done with a motivation to draw people around to listen to a political agenda, which has to do with restoring basic human rights for homeless people, if you want to call that political or politics. Seems to me like sort of basic morality, but there's always a problem when to try to do too much, and Huff is a very strained organization, so I'm hoping that this works, but we'll see. And if you want to be a part of this kind of cookery, and I think there's also some puppetry being talked about, come to the post office on Saturday around 4 or 4:30, where some homeless Huffsters are going to be, and some housed Huffsters as well. And you can also get food from Food Not Bombs, which is serving there. And then you can also hang for the Occupy meeting, which is still going as a sort of a certain continuity from the old Occupy way back a year and a half ago. And there are Occupies in other cities, and particularly Oakland, I'm told, that are still active. Santa Cruz has had a regular meeting every Saturday, and that's, I suppose that's, that just means it's a regular meeting, but issues are still being raised, people are still being encouraged to pay attention to them, different kinds of support are being given, for example, to Bradley Manning being the Grand Marshal in the San Francisco Gay Parade, which is coming up, I guess, at the end of the month. He was originally chosen and then dumped, and there's a big movement, and Santa Cruz Occupy supported it to restore that. It seems a little obscure and distant and symbolic for the Occupy I used to know, but you do what you can. Let's, speaking of Occupy, why don't we go back and hear a song or two, like maybe this one.
They never stopped. walking 99. We're walking 99.
And that's another one from Zuccotti Confidential. You can find it online at steveanddave.blogspot.com. But just look up Zuccotti, Z-U-C-C-O-T-T-I, Confidential. There's a little... It's apparently some of these songs are from actual music at the occupation. Specifically, well, here's what they write. Stephen Dave's May 2013 self-released album, Zuccotti Confidential, is an Occupy Wall Street song cycle of expertly crafted pop songs in the vein of the Beach Boys. Yeah, maybe. If the Beach Boys had been pepper sprayed and robbed of their First Amendment rights, then wrote an album about it. The 10-song album conjures specific people, incidents, and themes associated with Occupy Wall Street and defies the popular notion that no original music emerged from the movement. Plenty of music was created for Occupy, notes Stephen C. Baldwin, who's on vocals, guitar, and production on this Zuccotti Confidential album, and David Intrator, who's on sax. But the music that was played in Zuccotti on marches behind the barricades, the music that was from Occupy, was never recorded except in field recordings. This is the music that we've tried to include on this album. The music didn't stop when the encampment was shut down, said David Intrator. Although the November crackdown stopped the drummers, who provided the rhythm track for life at the park, the music itself was unstoppable. Musicians forbidden to use drums picked up guitars. Songs were invented to deal with the great trauma of losing Zuccotti Park and to create community in our wandering diaspora. Many of the themes in Zuccotti Confidential come from these days of wandering, loss, and bewilderment. The heartbreak can be heard in such songs as M17, about the momentous final battle by occupiers to re-inhabit Zuccotti, or 99 Miles, that's the song you just heard, about the grueling 99-mile march that took guitar-playing activists on a foot march from Philadelphia to Zuccotti along the highways and swamps of New Jersey in July 2011. It was important for me to write about some of the people who were heroes and anti-heroes to those of us in the park, says Baldwin. People like the man in the box, who I think of as the Warhol of cardboard, and the knitting ladies, who were characters right out of A Tale of Two Cities. And I wanted to write at least one song that mentioned Officer Winsky, says Baldwin, who ended up writing two songs, The Man on the Box and Back in Zuccotti Again, featuring NYPD officer whose presence loomed large for occupiers throughout 2011 and 2012. I happened to see Officer Winsky last week in Washington Square Park, but he didn't even remember me. That's a good thing, maybe, says Baldwin. Zuccotti Confidential would never have come about without the contributions of David Peel, who, along with Baldwin, Intrator, and a group of about 20 other musicians, formed what Baldwin called the OZM, Original Zuccotti Musicians. Paul called me earlier this year and yelled at me for letting all those songs rot away on paper, says Baldwin. He got me off my ass and into my kitchen, which is where I recorded everything except Dave's saxophone solos, which he remotely recorded and emailed to me. Album production was finalized using an ancient copy of Cubase running on a half-dead XP notebook. Musical influences on the album include Lou Reed, Nick Lowe, The Beach Boys, Serge Gainsbourg, Lester Young, John Coltrane, Sonny Rollins, and Bertolt Brecht. The music is probably not in the style that many people will likely associate with Occupy, but this is the music that we heard from inside the movement, from inside the Freedom Cage, along the side of the road, and around the camps as the lights grew dim and hope seemed to vanish from the world. It was this music that kept us going forward. Zuccotti Confidential. The Man in the Box, the story behind the songs. Here's a story about The Man in the Box, which you heard before the M17, or actually before the 99 Miles song. The Man in the Box came about because David Everett Carlson a visual artist who camped out at Zuccotti after returning from a long overseas trip to the Far East. His installation, a cardboard utility box in which he sat and painted, was on Liberty Street, an area that fell to the artists and included the knitting ladies into the bicycle generator rack. I immediately liked Carlson and got to know him quite well. He's an authentic madman style and ad guy who, like many in my age cohort, found himself without much of a future after the Great Recession kicked in. The song was written in Union Square in April 2012 after Carlson had been permanently displaced from Zuccotti after the M-17 debacle. I think that's the attempt to take back the park. Although he's been forever banned from Zuccotti, the man in the box can still be seen on the High Line holding paint-ins, but he soon may become a refugee again. New York City appears to be making it impossible for artists to make a living in public spaces. And in Santa Cruz, of course, we have similar restrictions on public spaces that are happening. And the other song we heard, Walking 90 Miles. Last year, I attempted to march 99 miles from Philadelphia to New York with a group of intrepid musician activists. After only 17 miles of marching, I collapsed after suffering a mosquito bite which carried a West Nile payload and was exfiltrated back to Brooklyn. I was terribly disappointed by my failure, and this song is an attempt to honor those who made the whole trip on a road so hot that our brains began to boil. So, let's hear a little more from our own Red Church area, and you can go down there on Monday and check things out between 5 and 7, munch on a bagel, chat with Huffsters and Occupy Santa Cruz homeless justice groupsters and anybody else who happens to be around.
Reports you from the street, or things you think that people should know who are listening to the radio show?
I have none to report from the street at all. From here, it's a lighter evening because we are serving 100 meal, but also because the first of the month is the time we have a drop off. Usually by the end of the month, people run out of money, and so
they'll be here
later.
Gnawing on the bagels.
Gnawing on the bagels. Yeah, hopefully they'll be fresh enough you don't have to gnaw on them.
Yeah. Fair enough. Thank you, Scott.
Sure.
Let's hear about this. We're talking with
Ariel.
And Ariel, you're you had something you wanted to say, sort of that begins a discussion. And what were you saying to me a moment ago?
I was saying that I'm not really quite sure when poverty became a crime, and that I'm not a homeless individual. I'm houseless. Mm-hmm. Home is wherever I choose to lay my head at night, and I choose to lay my head in Santa Cruz. So Santa Cruz is my home. Having a house is just putting myself inside of a box. It's kind of like putting myself back in a cage. And I'm pretty sure that if I'm content with my life and I'm not disturbing the peace, then there's no reason to be throwing me in jail. There's no reason to be telling me that I'm an eyesore, because I'm pretty sure that I still obey as many laws as I can, as long as they don't go against my moral code. And some of the laws that we have nowadays do go against them. I still respect them. I don't agree with them, but I accept them.
What laws are those?
That squatting is illegal. I'm pretty sure that when this country came about, that land is land. As long as I'm obeying by the laws of the land, then I'm still allowed to be here. I was thrown in jail after 3 days of being in Santa Cruz, just solely on the fact that I was parked someplace that they said I was being a vagrant. I'm no vagrant.
Now, where were you parked?
I was parked on Ocean Street behind Denny's.
And what happened? Describe that incident for me.
The police came over saying that they had heard a call. They got a call saying that there was a woman screaming and there was illicit drug use happening. What I was doing is I was giving my friend a place to rest his head for a moment and giving his dog a place to stay because his paws are hurt. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting back there. I'm smoking a cigarette, and the next thing you know, I'm being thrown in jail for possession of what they said was a stolen vehicle when it wasn't a stolen vehicle. It was my vehicle, which got impounded. And after which, they wouldn't OR me on my own recognizance, just because I didn't have an address to give them. I said, I'm not leaving Santa Cruz. This is where I live. They said, but you don't have an address to give us, so we can't reach you. So they kept me in there.
When was all this?
This happened on the 9th of May, and I wasn't released until the 21st.
You were held in jail on the charge of?
Grand Theft Auto, when I did not commit that crime.
And is that charge still pending?
No, that charge I pleaded no contest to, and they actually could not get me for it because I didn't commit that crime.
Even though you pled no contest, that's equivalent to a guilty plea.
Yeah, I pled no contest because I didn't have anything to say. I had nothing to say to these people.
So what penalty did they lay on you?
They gave me probation. That was all.
You have to see a probation person?
Yeah, I have to see a formal probation officer for 36 months, which keeps me in Santa Cruz for 36 months. But I don't plan on leaving, and I told them I'll respect everything that you tell me to do.
Probation also is often has a search clause, can have a drug testing clause. It's a real, it can be a real violation of your privacy. Also, if you are politically active, contact with police is either banned or severely frowned on. I actually really need to educate myself more specifically on the what's the updated situation for people on probation in Santa Cruz. In fact, if any people on probation would like to call in and talk about how that status operates and what impact it's had on their lives, do call in. The call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. I also want to remind people that there is a Free Radio Santa Cruz benefit coming up, performing and benefit concert. And that's going to be coming up on June 15th, Saturday after next, at 8 o'clock at the Resource Center for Nonviolence on Ocean Street, 612 Ocean Street, actually. Tickets are $10 online, $15 at the door. There's a sliding scale and donation. So give it a try. Again, that'll be June 15th. We need your support. We are... the people who are the broadcasters who usually support the station by paying rent aren't able to do it. There are people, apparently these are hard times for a lot of people. A lot of people are falling behind, losing their shows. Because we do require you pay rent to keep your show, because that's what keeps the station going. But the public can also be helpful here. So come on down June 15th, 8 o'clock, Resource Center for Nonviolence. Having a concert time with Rick Walker, Henry Kaiser, and Bill Walker, none of whom I know, but hey, maybe you do if you're in the music world or you just want to take a chance because you support and like Free Radio Santa Cruz. Back to the Monday's Ear on the Red Church.
Please respect me enough that even though I don't like you and I don't like what you're asking me to do, I'm still going to do it because it's what's going to keep me safe, and it's what's going to keep you happy. And
what's your full name?
Ariel Eden Malberg.
How do you spell the last?
M-A-L-B-E-R-G.
And who was your public defender who advised you to plead to this?
Kenneth Azevedo.
Yeah. What was your impression of how he told
you? Kenneth Azevedo is a dump truck, and I do not like him. I met with him once, and that wasn't even before my pretrial, and after which he told me to plead no contest, and so I went against my better judgment, and I did, and therefore got probation. He is not the best public defender. He's a public pretending clown. I do not like him. I do not respect him. I think that he is more confused than I am. I was the attorney.
What did you learn in jail, if anything? Any experiences there you want to talk about?
Well, what I learned in jail when I went into A unit, which is where they've moved all the females, is that the streets is a family. I was in there, and they knew I wasn't from Santa Cruz, and all these people from different sects and different groups and different families and different, you know, tribes came together. They sat me down the day they knew I was coming out, and they drew me a map, and they told me which is where, what is who, and how everything functions, and how I can better understand Santa Cruz if I just go out and start talking to people one-on-one. Just go talk to someone. Sit down with them. Hey, homeboy, homegirl, what's up? Tell me about yourself, because I don't like to make a decision about people based on other people's opinions, because then it's word of mouth. So I go up to somebody, regardless of what I've heard, and I ask them how they actually function. What's your daily schedule look like? How do you survive? Because I'm a survivalist. I choose not to live inside of a box. So I go against all of the laws of this country. And I remember the day when the police still had on the side of their car to serve and protect. Now it's we enforce the law.
The law.
So the police is not, when I hear police, people are not supposed to run away in fear. You're supposed to be like, oh, thank God, the police are here. We're going to be safe. No.
How do you feel now when you see a police car?
When I see a police car, I turn my head away because I'm afraid they're going to look at me and profile me, which they do.
Now, when you sleep at night, because you're an attractive younger woman.
Thank you.
Well, it's true. Have you found much either unwanted attention? Have you been harassed? Have you suffered any assaults? Have you? What's been your experience as a woman outside? Because you seem, first of all, are you single in your own way? Or?
Yes, I am single, and I choose to stay this way. And
a good self-defense tactic.
Absolutely. I people don't come up on me because I have really nothing that they want. and I don't tell people what I have. I don't put myself out on Front Street. If people try to come at me sideways, I explain to them intellectually, so sometimes they don't understand, that you don't know me, you don't know what I'm capable of. I could be a murderer for all you know, and you're trying to get at me, and I've had cops harass me when I'm walking by myself at night. They accuse me of being a prostitute, which I am not, and I just look at them and I say, you think because I'm a young woman on the streets in a dress walking around that therefore I'm all of a sudden working? What if I was just a respectable young student walking around and you did that?
What
that
would be. What did the police say to you when you said this?
I told them, absolutely not. I'm not working.
What did they say to you?
They said, ma'am, tell us the truth. We know what's really going on here. So the truth isn't what's real. It's what they want to hear.
And how many times have you been approached by the police on this issue?
Six.
And in the period of how, what time frame?
Over the last year.
And the last time this happened was when?
When I got out of jail, that same night.
And where were you?
I was on Ocean Street again.
And what, you know the name of the officer who spoke to you in this way?
I don't, but I know that he was bald and he was incredibly rude. And I told him, I think you're being incredibly rude and disrespectful to me.
And his response was?
His response was, don't sass me.
Don't sass you?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
What about the homeless community? What about men generally in the scene? Are you finding them respectful? Are you finding them good-looking? How are you finding them?
I find men in this community, off the cuff, I try to give everybody, you know, the benefit of the doubt. So I generally like to think that there's a bit of bad in the best of us. So not the bit of good in the worst of us. There's a bit of bad in the best of us all the time. I do things that I don't like. And as far as men in this community, there have been some men that have really reached out their hands and said, hey, we know you don't have a spot to stay. We want to help you out. And they don't try and get anything out of it. And then there have been men who try to do that. And I just walk away. If I don't like you, I'm going to choose not to be around you. I'm not going to fight you over it because I can't change you. And you can't change me. Only person I'm in control of is me and my attitudes in life. So I choose to just stick to mine and my own.
And that's worked fairly well for you in terms of no confrontations, or at least no physical abuse?
Yes, it has. Because they know that they can't do anything about it.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from New Jersey.
And Jersey? You're from Jersey?
Yeah, I'm from New Jersey.
When did you come out here?
I came out here May 1st.
And so this is a relatively new experience for you out here.
Yes, it is, and I really love Santa Cruz. I think that this is a great melting pot. It just sort of happens to be right in this crossing on the longitude and latitude of our map that just so happens to have every sect and every different type of person we have. It's like every representative from every different kind of clan you could have came here, and people are trying to live respectfully with each other.
And were you houseless in New Jersey?
Yes, I was.
And what drew you to Santa Cruz? All the wonderful services and the fine police?
No, I just kind of got a wild hair up my ass and decided I was going to go to Santa Cruz. Someone said you might like Santa Cruz, so I got in a car and I rode.
And then your car got taken from you?
Yes, it did. I'm still working on getting it back.
And I guess it's accruing quite a fine, or quite a towing storage charge.
Yes, it is. So the faster the better. So I'm trying to find myself some logical work, legal and logical work, that I can do on a daily basis, whether it's helping somebody, helping them move, being kind, spanging, whatever I need to do.
How is the general community treating you in terms of, there's been some claims that there's increased hostility to homeless people because of certain right-wing pressure groups, Take Back Santa Cruz, for instance. Mm-hmm. What's been your experience?
My experience is that I've been harassed. I've been called scum, homeless bum, all of that. And
when was the last time that happened?
That happened to me last night. And
What were the circumstances?
Just a group of white boys just drove by in a car and they started shouting at me, calling me names and whatnot. And
where were you?
I was right here on Pacific Avenue.
What time?
It was probably about 9:30 at night. I just ignored them.
Were you alone?
I was with a couple of friends, and some of them got all hot-headed about it, and I said, well, if it don't apply, let it fly. If you know
don't
it's
apply,
not true.
Let it fly.
Exactly, because if you know it's not true, it won't make you upset.
What do you see, what's your reaction to the homeless community generally here in terms of its needs? How are people being treated, not just you, but let's say other sisters and brothers on the street, too, use that phrase?
I would say that possibly looking into some more housing options, or different housing options, like having a specific campsite that's open, because a lot of homes are being taken away from people right now.
By homes, you mean camping areas? You're talking about physical structures?
Not just a physical structure, but just like a wooded area or some sort of section where we know we can go and we know we're safe there, because there are people who will allow you to live like up in the graveyard or do whatever, and they let you stay there, but up until they need it, or up until somebody says, no, they can't do that, that's a public place, they're trespassing. So if you know we're here, you know we're trying to be respectful to everybody who chooses to live inside of a house, why not help us? We're people too.
You're homeless. You're homeless scum. You know that, right?
Yeah, that's an opinion.
So, there's a group called Huff, meets every week, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'm always encouraging people to come to those meetings if you're interested in civil rights for poor people. Also, we're trying to document the kind of harassment you mentioned, because even though I think it's commendable that you just say, you know, come on, that's not about me.
It can be
you
stopped, know. Though.
It's important that for some people it can take it very hard,
yeah.
And it's also a grueler impact on you, even if you ignore it. It's a form of abuse.
Yeah.
And
it's verbal abuse.
It is. It's verbal abuse.
And I would be very much so interested in coming in.
I'll give you a card, and you can consider coming. You get free coffee, but no bagels, I'm afraid.
Oh, well.
You have to take your bagels here tonight.
So we have a cheeseburger criminal here. What's your name, sir?
Bob.
And Bob, you say Santa Monica police finally caught you in the act.
Yeah, I was sitting on the sidewalk eating a cheeseburger.
And when was this?
Approximately a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
And tell me more about this unusual, or should we say this typical criminal behavior on your part?
Well, it was one of those days where I managed to spange up enough money to get me a cheeseburger from McDonald's, and I proceeded to buy said cheeseburger and walk out to the sidewalk, which was off the main thoroughfare, and eat said cheeseburger. And
then what happened?
Three police walk up and proceed to give me a ticket.
What did they say to you?
I'm not allowed to sit on the sidewalk.
What did you say?
I'm eating a cheeseburger.
And did you offer to jump up and do jumping jacks and so forth?
Yes, I did. I immediately tried to get up and fix the wrong that I made, but no, they told me to sit down and not move, where they proceeded to harass me.
Did they confiscate your cheeseburger?
No. They did not confiscate my cheeseburger.
Well, there you are. See, that's the kindliness of the Santa Monica police.
Oh, yes. They were very nice, especially when they gave me a court date for next month, which I'm a traveler. How am I supposed to go to court for... And who wants to stay in Santa Monica for a month? They hate us.
Get more opportunities to meet police officers and learn about their tactics.
Yes. More opportunities to eat cheeseburgers and get tickets.
Well, you know, you just eat your cheeseburger standing up, son. Good for you.
Hey, it was in a place where it was not marked for non-sitting or anything like that. It was... They had nothing marked. There was no clear sign saying, do not sit here.
Did you point this out to the officer?
I did, in fact.
And their response was?
We don't care.
Interesting. Three officers for one ticket, or are they just, do they seem to be looking for a cheeseburger crime?
I believe we were picked out for being not from there. We were doing nothing wrong. We were busking, playing music, trying to earn a little bit of money, nice and legit, not trying to do nobody any harm. And
did your friends also get tickets?
One other one did.
How many were you?
There was three of us.
And what was his or her ticket for?
The female's ticket was for the same thing I got, sitting and eating a cheeseburger.
See, two had a cheeseburger. This doubles the crime, you know.
Yes, it does.
What about the third person? Was he or she sitting?
No, he was standing at the time, but he did get thoroughly harassed.
In what way?
Threatened with a ticket.
For standing without a cheeseburger.
Well,
did they say go buy a cheeseburger?
And vagrancy, I believe, was the ticket infraction.
There was no such crime, actually, yeah. But maybe that's what they said?
Yes, it was. They used our ignorance of the law in California against us. I realize this now. But still, a cheeseburger sitting on a sidewalk, you'd think they might just let something like that walk. But no. They
have you seen a walking cheeseburger now? Come on.
I wish. I'd be chasing it down the road with a stick.
Some of us would, too. I'm getting a little hungry, and since there's no food here tonight.
That's sad.
And we've been talking with Bob.
Have you been hassled here in Santa Cruz?
Not since I got here.
And how long has that been?
I got here yesterday. I've been here before.
Well, keep watching.
No, thank you.
Watch out for the cheeseburger patrols.
Yes, the cheeseburger patrol. I'm a regular hamburger now, aren't I?
A hamburger, exactly. Well put, son. And your name again?
Bob.
Thank you, Bob. All right, we are talking with... Here, I'll stand like this.
We're talking with Danny again.
Danny,
I can't check my mic. You don't have a tissue.
I don't want to involve anybody else in this matter, but I went out of my way, took my Social Security check, took some people into a motel. Somebody peeled my driver's license, my everything else, after I was so kind to do this for everybody else out of my whole check.
What a bummer, man.
Anyway, no, it's all good.
How long ago did that happen?
This was the first of the month. We had a whole lot of fun, but somebody got stupid and took the shit. And, you know, I'm not going to go to the police or anything else like that. I just want to let it be alerted on public radio that people, when somebody comes with generosity and spends about $1,000 on homeboys and homegirls, you know, and having a lot of fun, they need to really step up to the plate and be real. So that's about
watch your shit, I guess.
And that's about all I got to say, because I lost my driver's license, Social Security card, everything. And now I got to go around to all these entities. I got to go to Capitola.
I'm fucked. Sorry to hear it, man. We've been talking with Danny.
Thanks, Danny.
Okay, we're talking with...
You know, it's Butterfly again here in Santa Cruz out of Sacramento. And street reports are, down on the rivers where it's peaceful and quiet and people need to get away so they're not around the tourists, so they can be out of the way, they're getting harassed over and over and over, and they keep the campsites clean and they move every 2 days. People in the park are going to the hospital every day because their hearts are bad and they have no one to help them and no one to support them or anything, so ambulances are being called all the time. And the reports on the streets also are there are more people going to meetings and getting jobs. It's really amazing. Those are the street reports. It's amazing.
And what about yourself? Any problems with the police?
Oh, no, I'm Butterfly. I never have problems with the police. See?
I'm glad to hear it.
No, I won't have problems with the police because there's no law against sleeping. And
actually, there is.
Well, there's really not, but they think there is. And as long as when they approach me, I am kind, courtesy, and quick with the smiles and blessing their morning. They will give me smiles all the time.
Yeah, you haven't been approached at night and told to wake up and get a ticket.
No, they wait until 6, and then they approach me with smiles because I've been outside 26 years, Robert. So I've learned how. And I've learned how. And so before they get there, I'm up and doing good, and they can only say wave.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz? I know you've been up in Sacramento back and forth a bit.
Well, I've been coming back and forth to Santa Cruz since 2006 when I took on a marriage. I came here to, well, anyways, it wasn't what it was choked up to be. It wasn't what I thought it was. It wasn't what they perceive it to be. And it was kind of a trap when I got here. And then,
marriage usually is.
You know,
as a bigot against marriage, of course.
And, you know, it's kind of really strange, which is really cool because a lot of people, I'm really kind of back. I'm Butterfly out of Sacramento. And I'm going to... You can do what you want to do, but you can't stop us. We're here, and we made Santa Cruz. If it wasn't for us in the beginning, Santa Cruz wouldn't even be known. So go ahead, take your money, because, you know, everybody's going broke, and you're one paycheck away from where we are. And we'll help you when you get here. Love, Santa Cruz.
And we've been talking with...
Butterfly.
Thank you, Butterfly. Guitar on your back, Butterfly, and you say you purchased this but don't know how to play?
Yeah, I purchased a guitar because I believe in Santa Cruz. I believe in what made Santa Cruz.
This is for CJ Stock, no doubt, when he loses his 83rd guitar.
Yes, you see, I can't never keep one for more than 24 hours because when I go to sleep, when I wake up, it's gone. But you betcha believe this is going under my... But anyways, yes.
I'll have to visit you and see what's going on just to be sure.
No, don't just visit me, but anybody that plays my guitar, when you meet them, I'm going to make sure that they say this is...
You're going to make beautiful music with that person?
I'm going to learn, yes, sir. And everybody that plays it will make beautiful music for me, with me, and for everybody else around them.
Well, for all I know, this man may be a guitar maestro. Are you yourself, sir, a... He's shaking his head. Well,
no, but this man next to me hung out with me like nobody else can do. And since he hung out with me, counseling me, talking with me, making me feel human and like there's a human next to me, I went and purchased things that will grow and prosper.
Financial advisor as well, perhaps?
No, because I'm stubborn.
I'm a therapist, perhaps.
Yes. As long as somebody goes the journey next to somebody, they don't have to say a word. They just have to stand by each other. That's what we need to do, no matter where we are, how much money you lose or how much money you make. If you come together and put everything together and use everything that you have at your fingertips that's around you, put it together, have it work for you, and just keep Santa Cruz beautiful and free and lovely. Let's stop making this a money thing, because it's turning really ugly.
We've been talking to that butterfly among butterflies.
I'm caterpillaring.
There you have it. Butterfly herself. All right, we have a comment. What's your name, madam?
My name's Katie, and I think this blows.
What blows?
Apparently, like a fart in the wind, the smell of fucking no dinner at Calvary Episcopal Church.
So you came here hungry and left with only a bagel to your name?
No, actually, I came here for rations, to be honest with you, because I try to stay on top of things like that, since I'm not a tweaker, as somebody has recently accused. God, so stereotypical. Anyways, no, to be honest with you, I still have a sandwich from the dinner over at the shelter, and yeah.
How's the shelter treating you?
They're tolerable, I guess.
How long have you been using their services?
Off and on for 6 years.
And has it changed in any way?
Seven. I think they're a lot ruder than they used to be.
And
there's the staff in general is just a lot ruder.
You're an attractive younger woman. How are you treated at the shelter by the staff in terms of your femaleness?
I'm pretty much left alone. They're pretty respectful.
What about the clientele? How do they treat you?
There really is no treat about it.
No treat? No. More of a treatment than a treat?
No, it's a necessity.
I gotcha. Anything you want to advise people who are coming to use the services of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call it?
Take what you need and leave what you don't. Don't be a dick and be greedy.
Any reports on police misconduct?
I try to avoid them at all costs. I really can't get into it. I'm not at liberty to speak on that right now.
Private security guard problem?
You know what? I'm just not at liberty to say right now.
So you have secret information, which we may be able to find out later.
As far as I'm aware, all information is public. There's just stuff that I'm not comfortable talking about.
Fair enough. And we've been talking with?
Katie.
Thank you, Katie. We have another man with a complaint of some kind?
No, actually, no complaints. The music was excellent all weekend, and Roger Lee and I rocked it, and then Jay and me and several others rocked it, and I went to bed, woke up about 5 o'clock downtown, and they were still playing. So I think the Dead Dance last night was a raging success, an unmitigated disaster of music, but it was fun for everybody. I think they had a good time. I slept through the whole thing, but that's just me.
And that's the report from
Santa Cruz.
Thank you. Oh, here we are at about 5:10 on June 5th, 2013. We're talking with a man at a table in a, I don't know what kind of a hat that is. What kind of a hat is that?
Oh, this hat, you can get at Flying J for $20, and that way I don't have to wash my hair very often.
It's a kind of a, it's not quite an Indiana Jones hat. It is kind of a felty, greeny, it's got a rim. Anyway, what's your name, sir?
Okay, I'm Keith McHenry, and I'm sitting here at the Santa Cruz Farmers Market. Some people have noted that this may not be the proper location, but we do not know. So we found that it was a good location, so we are staying here currently.
You haven't been arrested yet at this location. I know that you've probably been accosted by the Farmers Market person telling you that you need a permit to be here. It should be in advance.
Yeah, well, they told me I was in the wrong location, of course, and that I should go to the other location. But I went over there, and it just didn't seem right. So I stayed here. People suggested I just stay here. It would be more appropriate.
And that's Keith McHenry, who I ran into yesterday at the Farmers Market in Santa Cruz, quite unexpectedly. He just sort of showed up. I'm not sure where he was going, where he was coming from, but there he was. And there's more of the interview, which I'll be playing in a moment. Where he was located was at a table near the Cedar Street sidewalk. And the significance of this is that more recently, oh gosh, a month or two ago, I played an interview with a woman selling chocolate, was it ice cream or delicacies or something, confections she'd made. And she was being told by the farmer's market coordinator that she couldn't be on the public sidewalk, which really kind of concerned me, pissed me off, in fact, because obviously she can be on the public sidewalk, but she was being essentially being told that it was sort of like the Homeless Lack of Services Center creating a low impact or no impact zone around their Homeless Lack of Services Center facilities out at 115 Coral Street. Based on some attempt to, I don't know, pander to nearby businesses or residential bigot groups or NIMBY groups that don't want homeless people hanging out. They, the farmers market, didn't want don't want alternative jewelers hanging out or people like that there. They've tightened things up massively from a decade ago. And I remember very strongly that a decade ago I was doing a lot of insisting, denouncing farmers market management. Well, it was actually 12 years ago, for trying to drive away the drum circle there. And that in those days there was a drum circle next to the farmers market, to trying to drive away people who were alternate culture, displaying beads or giving out literature on the sides of the farmers market, which had always been the case, as far as I could see. And it was a, it was an attempt to clean up, sanitize the farmers market. And apparently, they've been successful because you don't see many people on the edges of the farmers market. At least I don't when I go through. And also, of course, it's become largely a commercial venture, or at least in part a commercial venture, which has driven away the drum circle. And as I've mentioned on the air before in the past, the place where the drum circle was under the trees is now occupied by the notorious Manthri Srinath's Lulu Carpenter's coffee establishment, which became notorious for harassing panhandlers on the sidewalk and also getting nasty with students, even customers. One time, Manthri Srinath attacked activists, threw coffee on them during the 2003 anti-Bush protests. And it's one of the few places, and there are relatively few, where I've been banned. I've been banned from the Manthri Srinath Lulu Carpenter since 2003. But that's, I think we even had Huff meetings there at one time, but not for quite a while. In any case, Keith McHenry is in town, or was in town yesterday, and who knows, maybe he'll be around longer. He talks about stuff, and here he is talking.
You're kind of right across from the very edge of the Calvary Episcopal Church at the...
I'm next to the Somoza guy, which to me is the most important thing. Yeah. The guy's stealing money at my table currently. Yeah. So the... and anyway, when I just set up this table, I was over at the bookstore.
Bookshop Santa Cruz or Logos?
A few minutes. I came in that way and I go, I need money. I'm going to set up.
Which bookstore are you talking about?
The bookstore Santa Cruz by the post office.
Bookshop.
Yeah. So I was over there for a little bit and some guy told me all about cooking for 1.5 hours. I was exhausted. So I, but then another guy came, gave me $1, told me this touching story about how when he was poor, he ate at Funa Bons for years and it was a great thing.
In San Francisco?
No, this was in Santa Cruz. He lived on the streets here. I didn't give his name, but he said, look, I'm going to the farmer's market, I'm going to put a sticker on my bucket to go to the farmer's market. You should go over there. It's better than over here. So I said, oh, okay. So I packed up and came over here.
So you were inside Bookshop Santa Cruz?
No, outside on the sidewalk. Outside. Yeah, across the street. And I'm trying to be in an area where no one controlled it very much.
Were you on Pacific Avenue?
On Pacific Avenue, I think, or Front Street. Front Street, yeah.
That's kind of an obscure location.
It was weird, but I did only get 2 visitors, so it was, and I only brought in $1. So it was not the best location.
Whereas here, they're just flocking to the table, I see.
Yeah, they've been flocking here. We've had a lot of good stories here as well, so that's been really good. And as soon as I set up, I got a call from Taos, New Mexico. So what had happened was about almost 2 weeks ago now, there was a rumor when I was doing a table at the natural food store, SIDS, that
in Taos,
New Mexico, that the government was going to try to get rid of us. And then, sure enough, they gave us a citation for they crossed out the citation. It said selling food without a permit, and they had to cross out selling and write serving.
Serving.
And so they did that, and they gave us that, and I was really burned out because I don't want to really deal with all that because I've been gardening like crazy in high winds. But anyway, so that happened.
Did you get the citation personally?
Yeah, in the end, yeah, I did. And they and
you continue to serve food in defiance of the citation?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what, how it works, yeah.
And how it works. That's unlawful behavior.
So then what happened is that but before that, we went to Sid's natural food store to get our Saturday morning delivery like normal, and there's a beautiful box of produce being discarded, and the guy said, we can't give this to you. There's a sign on the walk-in here saying, do not give any food to Food Not Bombs.
Well, there it is. So they're just following orders.
Yeah, so when I determined this afternoon from the first phone call was that... sure enough, the health department had called Sid's and told them they weren't allowed to give us any more food. So, anyway, Julia, one of the other volunteers that's been around in Taos for years and is well known, she went to Sid's and said, "What's up? This is crazy. You can't. What's happening here?" And the guy, she found the owner or a higher up person, and the guy goes, "Yeah, this is stupid. We should be able to give food to Food Not Bombs. They shouldn't be bothering people." So that person called up the health department and said, "Look, you should stop bothering Food Not Bombs. That's not right. And we're going to start giving them food again." And so the health department said, "Okay, that's the way it is."
So the health department takes its orders from SIDS?
Yeah, I think it might have to because SIDS is like too popular. It's the only natural food store in town, and it's a huge store, and everybody loves it. And it used to be the food co-op, but the guy privatized it. So there's some trippy problems surrounding that. But, you know, they give us food every day, so I think we're back in power again.
You're back in the moolah. Moolah, what about your citation? Has it been dismissed?
No, it hadn't been dismissed. But the last time I got one of these, which is 5 years ago, I ignored it. And
in Taos, New Mexico?
In Taos, New Mexico, and nothing ever happened. It just, no one came and got me or made me pay money.
No beatings? No hospitalization?
No beatings?
Come on, man. This is very boring. How can I make entertainment out of this?
It is true. So there was a little drama for a short while, and it blew over. But all these other weird things were going on, too, so I was getting a little concerned.
I want to hear about those, but first... And I double-check, and we are recording. So what other weird things, as you put it, such as health officials trying to make sure that their communities aren't poisoned by your questionable vegan meals?
Yeah, well, the first noticeable bizarreness was... I've been organizing for Medea Benjamin to speak in Taos, New Mexico.
Isn't this the traitorous woman who was caught in harassing poor Obama recently?
Correct. She was on television or something like that. Yeah. And so I've known her since the old days when she and Kevin lived in San Francisco and did Global Exchange. So I, I was all...
Medea Benjamin, for those who don't know, is sort of the point person or one of the... lead folks in a Code Pink, and recently I think she had an Obama press conference or one of Obama's lieutenants was demanding answers to questions about the drones or some such murderous activity by the federal government, and she got escorted out. And but she did ask the question. I think Obama actually engaged in a dialogue with either her or one of her associates, but it was all sort of, who, me? Oh, no. You know, it's going to prove how reasonable he was. Anyway, let's hear some more of Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs.
Excited that she's on a tour, and I helped her come to Taos. And but then I went to called up to make sure I could do the literature table at the event when I returned from, I was over in the Philippines, in Indonesia.
What organization was she working with?
Oh, she works for Code Pink, Medea
Benjamin.
Code Pink,
and that was about the table would be under the auspices of Code Pink?
Yeah, I'd be doing the Food Not Bombs table as a local co-sponsor of the event. Okay. Right, yeah.
And the event was a Code Pink event.
Yeah, Code Pink. And so there was Code Pink was there, and but what was weird is one of the people that approached me years ago to find out why Food Not Bombs was at the Taos Peace House and Info Shop, who had disappeared for 3 years, 4 years, since the Peace House went down. She somehow got a table at the same event, even though she had nothing to do with the peace movement and doesn't do anything. So, and then And oddly enough, that she was able to get it so that I was not allowed to do a literature table.
She took your space?
She blocked me from, not only took my space, but she, more to the point, got the management of the theater to not allow me to do a table.
I mean, they revealed your sex pervert past?
Yeah, I wish such a thing existed. So,
how did they manage to do this? Tell me more. I mean, what did they exactly? You came in with your table and they said, nope, can't be here, or what?
No, I call. You know, in Taos, because we're a tiny little town, what you do is you call up like 5 days before. So, like, basically, when I arrived to town, I handed out flyers at an event at the same theater. And then I talked to the management there, and I said, look, you know, I want to do a literature table. And they said, okay, well, just call us in the morning. So I called in the morning. They said, oh, well, you're not a sponsor. I go, why am I not a sponsor? Oh, you're not. You're not allowed to be a sponsor. I'm like, well, okay, that's weird. So that was one thing. Another thing was...
What did you do? Did you acknowledge? Didn't you call Medea and say, oh, Medea, what, help, help?
Well, I did email Medea, and she was somewhat busy.
Too busy to allow you your First Amendment rights to be there?
Well, I don't know what happened, but anyway, I emailed a lot of people.
What happened was you didn't set up your table.
No, in the end, I set up outside in front of the building, which turned out to actually be pretty good. But, you know, so I did that. But and it's more not so much around the table or doing it, not doing it. It's that this person who was so disruptive of my life at this one point in life, in a suspicious sort of way, had re-entered my life to be disruptive again. So that...
Merely coincidence, for sure.
It could be a coincidence. And then I, of course...
How did she disrupt your life before? Was this one of those unwanted children that you've had all over the world?
No, she came to a meeting at the Taos Peace House Info Shop and sat next to me and said, why are they letting Food Not Bombs be a member of the Taos Peace House and Info Shop? And I go, well, actually, Taos Food Not Bombs started the Peace House, and we're renting the building, and we've invited everybody else to participate in this. So then...
Threw her arms around you and apologized, broke into tears?
No. Then she... her husband was supposed to be in Veterans for Peace. So she... The Joe, originally a Veterans for Peace, he was a very gracious person. We asked for $25 to help with the bills. He gave us $50. He then gave us just other money randomly because they thought Food Not Bombs was great, so on. Then this new person started complaining that I was taking $25 from Veterans for Peace and driving all over America speaking at colleges getting rich.
Well, you're well known for your fancy shoes. I've noticed you got a rather attractive pair of clodhoppers on there.
Yeah, I do that. And then, so there was a whole series of people. I ended up, eventually, that woman was involved in sending me a certified letter that was the same as, word for word, as the letter Hugh Mejia had mailed me after the Unfree Trade Tour. Kicking me out of Food Not Bombs in that letter. The only difference in this letter and that letter was that I was being kicked out of the peace movement.
Hugh Mejia's letter, of course, was back in the 90s, and this was more recent, right?
Correct, yeah. It was weird that the same exact letter...
And I guess Keith's point is that he isn't stating this, but he suspects that there is some kind of... perhaps underlying government conspiracy to discredit him and discredit Food Not Bombs, sow dissension in the ranks with Food Not Bombs. Hugh Mejia was an activist who I actually had a lot of respect for. He was a camera person with Food Not Bombs in the early 90s who did a lot of documenting of the police harassment of Food Not Bombs. But then apparently conflicts developed between him and Keith, or from Keith's perspective, he, for one reason or another, I think Keith suspects government intervention, attempted to sabotage his tour in Spain by different means, but a lot of black propaganda or negative statements about Keith and what he was doing. I kind of caught it all from the outside at the time, And he had disappeared under mysterious circumstances. No one's heard from him for about 15 years. Anyway, this is he compares Humahia with this other woman's who apparently they wrote the letter he says was identical word for word, indicating perhaps either very sloppy government work or a great coincidence. Who knows? I hope that has some clarity. It's a vague description of trying to explicate what Keith is talking about here, which might not be clear to your average listener, or perhaps it is.
Same words with only the name Phnom Penh's Exchange for Peace Movement was sent to me 10 years later. Yeah, 11 years.
Lazy activity on the part of who knows who.
Yeah, whoever writes letters to kick me out of things. And then, so that was a weird thing. And then the next thing, what was, so then somehow.
When did this whole incident happen, this most recent incident?
Oh, this all started 30 days ago. And then 30 days ago also I started getting smear emails saying that I'd had the same ones with my mansion in Marin. And
what about that mansion in Marin?
Yeah, the same mansion that I've been trying to find for my whole life.
Fun baby from Carmel. Oh, no, that's somebody else.
Yeah, right, something like that. So anyway, so I've so I got that, which is that I'm going, the same thing, you know, like going around. I got a bunch of emails smearing me for being a millionaire and somehow stealing all the money from Phnom Penh. That's how I get to be the millionaire. Bought the mansion, sold the meat. That's why we're vegan, stuff like that. And then there was another one. I posted something on Facebook. I got totally slammed with that one where it was like, it was just on that guy that invented Facebook was funding XL Keystone Pipeline, right? And so I wrote, wow, we should make our own, this is outrageous, you know, we're trying to organize on Facebook, we shouldn't be supporting this dude, we should make our own Facebook. I got like a whole raft of like, oh, you're just trying to be famous and blah, 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 and the same stuff, you're a millionaire, you got a mansion in Marin, the same stuff. So it's
nothing more creative.
No, they're using the same.
Maybe an undercover metal detecting nuclear physicist. I can't quite.
Something. Yeah. So anyway, so then one of the other key players in the destruction of the Taos Peace House, the guy that was. Yeah, it would be better if it was. If the guy that moved in to sell drugs at the Peace House and threw all my belongings away, was. He somehow became involved. Hi, how's it going? Do you know about Phnom Penh? Cool. So so that guy tagged a ride with two of my collective members across America. He was unbelievable, man, that guy. He called right when I got back from to Taos in what became the end of the Peace House.
This was 30 days ago?
No, this was a lot. He just arrived again to my land with these people, like, from my group. I was like, how did that end up happening? So all these characters that were involved in destroying the Taos Peace House and Info Shop all reappeared 30 days ago.
Maybe it's a reunion of sorts.
Could be. But then, so there was just all these weird things. And then when we got the documents saying we can't share food, all these different things happening all within the same period of time. So it's very, getting cut off from the food source, smeared a bunch of times from all these different ways. It had that energy of like something's up, like there's going to be a war somewhere, there's going to be an economic collapse, there's going to be some kind of dramatic thing that usually Phnom Penh would be organizing around or dealing with, but would now be have their time taken up by all this stupid stuff. And that's what happened before, like with the RNC. Hi, how's it going? When the last time this happened, they raided the Phnom Penh's house in Minneapolis, arrested the 8 kids there, charged them with violating the Patriot Act.
What happened in those charges?
Weirdly, they eventually all got dropped, and there's a book out about it, which unfortunately really very doesn't, where the people don't even admit they were in Phnom Penh's. I mean, there was something went on with that, too. That was weird.
Name of the book?
I don't know. Something about the RNC-8. It just came out.
Huh.
Yeah.
Those were the RNC-8 you're talking about?
Yeah, the RNC-8, yeah.
And they were primarily a Food Not Bombs group?
Well, yeah, they were actually at the time of the FBI became interested in them. They were nothing but Minneapolis-St. Paul Food Not Bombs, and they were having these meetings, and they called me about how to feed a lot of people at the Republican National Convention.
2008?
Yeah, in 2008. So I started supporting them and helping them, and I was supposed to go there. But I ended up, the money that I got from speaking at colleges from the spring semester disappeared in the Food Not Bombs bank account, and there was no money for June, July, August, September, October. And then in November, the bank called me and said, hey, we found this $4,000 in your in this desk. You want to have us deposit it in your
cash account? Or a check?
In checks, in the checks that I gave them.
They wouldn't be you. Apparently, they weren't. You think, well, I won't even discuss whether they would have, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, who knows? I did meet another woman named Naomi Wolf, who had exactly the same thing happen to her in that same, in June.
What was that thing?
Which was that the money, she put money in the account, it was gone. She had, was overdrawn, her account was overdrawn, even though she had put her money in the account. They could not find it. She also had the problem of the phone couldn't be fixed, you know, which I had. It turned out, like, just like me, her website went from, like, you know, being 25, in my case it was $51 a month, and it went up to $1,000 a month. And, you know, there was like a whole, a lot of chaos for all of June, July, August, September, October, November.
Of what year?
Of 2008. And as soon as the election was over, the phone rang, the email bill went back down to 51. It's as though nothing, none of that stuff in those 6 months ever really occurred.
Well, sometimes it's, you know, I blame the moon myself.
It could have been the moon. It was weird. And it happened to other activists all across the country at that time. So it's very strange.
What other activists?
Well, definitely I knew that the one that I heard was talking to Naomi Wolf, and she had the same thing happen to her.
Anybody else?
I don't know of others, but I would, it seems...
Other activists all across the country. Don't you think that you and she, as two examples, hardly qualifies as all across the country?
But I did hear, I mean, I don't know the details of other people having problems, exactly what, if it was exactly the same, but people were disrupted, and of course, we had the problem of being infiltrated in two locations during that period, same 6 months. We had Brendan Darby, who was trying to get two guys from Midland, Odessa, Texas, to firebomb the Republican convention.
You know, Keith, so we're talking with... No.
And it's really...
He's talking about the rodeo.
And there was a further conversation about the successful attempt, apparently, to shut down the rodeo nearby on the basis of mistreatment of animals, which I will play some more of, I guess, on Sunday at 9:30, assuming that I make it into the studio if... Uncle Dennis is nice enough to me and gives me the proper kind of treatment when I leave the studio tonight. I'm beginning to feel a little discriminated against here, but I'm going to live with it. That was Keith McHenry yesterday at the farmer's market, sitting, standing a bit. He was at a Food Not Bombs table with a lot of literature. And his merry self. That's it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, of course, is... help when you need it, Donuts Man, doing a special 3-hour session of get nostalgic with the music, forget about the present, and come to the Free Radio Santa Cruz benefits, plus a little Earth First update. Anything coming up, Dennis, we should know about?
Benefit, June 15th, 8 o'clock.
Indeed, indeed. As
Resource Center for Nova.
Indeed, indeed. That's 8 o'clock on June 15th, every Free Radio Santa Cruz benefit.
Be there or send money.
How does the clock look in terms of the station going off the air? How many days are left in the big clock?
24.
24 days and we go off the air. Is that correct? You heard it here first, folks, or at least today.
Well, 24 days and we don't have a place to transmit from.
I see. So
we could transmit from Robert's mansion.
That's true. My mansion, is it in Carmel or in Marin? I'm not sure. Anyway,
it's the mansion up by De La Viega.
There's a mansion. Okay, I'll go find one.
That's the one we...
Yeah.
Have your family buy that for you.
Oh, okay. I'll immediately contact the appropriate authorities. And Anyway, I'm going to put on a little music so Dennis can set up, and I will be available at 423-HUFF if anybody
Maybe.
Wants. At least my machine will be available. If I'm not, I'll try to pick up the calls later.
Sometimes.
And, oh, no, I'm pretty good about it, Dennis. But if the machine is working. Anyway, thank you for listening. If you did, thanks for all the flood of calls I was getting. I was sort of overwhelmed. Actually, I want to apologize for part of the show. I think the phone ringer was turned down, and I wasn't able to perhaps to hear you when you called in. So don't give up hope. Call the Huff line, volunteer to help, send money and guns, or at least money, and we will talk.
What about the lawyers?
Lawyers, I don't think much of lawyers.
Lawyers is the law.
No. Lawyers are don't like lawyers. Although I'm going to be with a lawyer in court tomorrow morning, and if you want, that's federal court, 9 o'clock. You can check me out. I will not be in Nazi regalia, however. That is not part of the game. But we will be talking about the right to make don't act like a bunch of fascist gestures at city council meetings, and that is something that's been going on and on and on. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides, and I'll be talking at you again.
Once they gave welfare to the poor, food stamps for the grocery store. But now there's workfare, you know there's been a switch. The poor sweep up the streets, and welfare's for the rich. It's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay. High-class bandits bought some banks, withdrew all the money, thanks. The SNL bailout, $1 trillion, they said. It's all getting paid back with the taxes from your pay. And it's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay. See those corporate hustlers go. Big Pentagon portfolio. They make some payoffs and get billions back, or drive away real fast in a welfare Cadillac. It's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay. Don't live alone. Just one job, work fair. Don't get old, don't get sick, work fair. Leave the easy life to the slick. No free rides and no free eats. Guess they'll show those welfare cheats. Assistance vouchers make you look seedy. Forget that school lunch, kids. Lower taxes for the greedy. It's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay.
And that's the end of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Uncle Robert will be back on Sunday at 9:30. What you were listening to is Ray Corona Band. It says the $5 Working People's Music Tape, but it's a CD. Anyway, that's one of free radio's CDs, I guess. I don't know where it came from. We'll just stick it up here and something will happen to it. I'm Uncle Dennis. What's going to ensue for the next 3 hours is something called From the Cream to the Dregs. And we're going to explore the music of the 60s and the 70s and beyond. Rock and roll, psychedelic, and blues for you. Right here on the finest radio in Santa Cruz, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. We're also on the Wide Weird Web. Go to our webpage, click on the red dot, and catch our stream. So, stay tuned. We'll have the Brew of the Week, a rather unique brew from Utah. And then coming up at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, all the environment.